Hola, hola, and welcome to the Drama Club. On this week's episode, we talk new additions to Celebrity Families, Ben Shapiro, Dolly Parton, Paul and Karini from 90 Day Fiancé, Lakeith Stanfield, and Trifling Ass Talib Kweli. And then later, Steph's got the story of Marvin Gaye. All this and more on the podcast that tells you what's going on. Stay tuned.
What up, fam?
What up, fam?
It's good, y'all. Feels good, right?
Good, right?
Yeah, I know it, dude. And without further ado, we broadcasting live from CA to NY.
Earlier in the week when nothing was really happening, I was like, I guess we never talked about Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel had a secretized baby.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then I wrote, because Chrissy Teigen said she's pregaton. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which that sounded kind of a little bit scary. Did you hear?
You want to tell the story?
Sure. So okay. Chrissy Teigen announced that she's pregnant. She's pregnant with your baby, third baby. She said that... you know, she recently had her breast implants taken out and she was really public about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for their first two kids, I guess they did IVF because they were having a little bit of trouble conceiving. Yeah. So she definitely didn't think she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before the surgery, they take a pregnancy test usually for women.
Mm-hmm.
It was negative. I guess it was a false negative. So she had gone under and everything. And then afterwards found out that she was like pregnant during that.
Yeah.
That's scary, dude.
I mean, yeah, it's scary, but it's like a moment. I think it's a moment of anxiety. And then as soon as like you verify everything's okay, it's like, yeah,
you know. You can pass it on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pass on. What? Keep it moving.
There you go.
I'm sorry. I'm tired. It is 103 degrees outside where I live.
Oof, oof.
Yeah. We're staying in the air conditioning. In my note I wrote Chrissy Teigen is pregnant, but more importantly her banana bread recipe slaps.
She birthed that banana recipe, but that banana bread recipe. Yeah. So third baby for them, good for them, congrats. She seemed
that's cool.
Super happy because she says that she's taken a pregnancy test every single month since she was 21 years old.
Yeah, which girl,
hoping for a positive.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, congrats, that happened for you.
Could it be me? oh, man. I like her. I don't, you know, some people don't like her or say things about her. I mean, I guess everybody has some problems, right?
She's human, you know, which is what I appreciate from her.
You know
she'd
really
be making
like
mistakes all the time.
Yeah, and she's like upfront about it.
Yeah.
She's not like trying to hide it or trying to be perfect or anything, which I like. You know why I really like her? Because she's always with her mom.
Yeah.
Like she seems super fucking close to her
mom. I was like, damn, when did y'all get pregnant? Because your mom is always there.
You look like fucking Beetlejuice. Your fucking hair is crazy.
I look like Sideshow Bob.
I always forget that your hair is curly because you like literally never.
Yeah, I know.
And you've straightened it so much that it doesn't curl like.
It doesn't curl. Look at it. It's like. It only gets curly on the roots, you know? So it's like curly in the roots and then it's just like.
Rank.
Rank. Yeah. It me. Turn his hair pink and it me. Also because I have a zit, so it's like
dude, I got a zit too. Tiff was talking about I've never had body acne.
Oh, ever? Not even when you were a kid?
No, acne has never been a problem for me. I'm not trying to flex, but I mean God gave me something, right? Weight has always been my problem, but yeah, I didn't even know there was like acne body wash. That's cool.
Yeah
I mean that makes sense. What the hell else? Oh, yeah, that Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel had a secret-ass baby.
That's crazy that they kept that shit quiet.
Yeah, because that motherfucker is loud.
Yes. And also, the tea is that, you know, so she was pregnant when he had that little dalliance with his co-star in New Orleans.
the little entanglement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was definitely entangled with her.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened to that girl?
I don't know. And what's up with that movie?
That movie, like, fell off after that. Like, they didn't even want to really promote it.
I mean, we'll see
it. Or anything.
Did it come out? I don't know.
I doubt it. I'm not running to go see no fucking Justin Timberlake movie.
Or any movie.
Oh, that's true. There you go. I'm never going to the theaters again, by the way.
I actually just read today that AMC, here it is, AMC reopening with 15-cent tickets.
Yeah, that's fucking ridiculous.
Don't fucking
just so they can make sure that shit's gonna be packed to the brim.
For real, but don't put your life in danger for a 15-cent movie ticket. That's ridiculous.
I'm trying to remember that one movie now that Justin Timberlake was in about that kid that was killed. Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah. Alpha Dog. That's a pretty
crazy story. Yeah, Alpha Dog.
Yeah, so shout out to them and their... Yeah, and I remember, like, you texted me at one point, maybe like a month ago, like, did they have another baby? Did I miss them having another baby? And I was like, no, they're talking about their first baby.
Yeah, which I don't even remember what that was now. But
yeah.
Yeah, super, yeah, that's cool. Like, Anne Hathaway has, like, kids, and I didn't fucking know that.
Who knew? Not me.
I didn't know she was married.
Is she? Oh, yeah, that's right, because she was with that. We did an episode on it. Yeah,
she was with that scammer. Good for her. Speaking of marriage, Ben Shapiro.
We hate him.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ben Shapiro got his panties in a twist because of the WAP song and music video. So then he got on Al Gore's internet to talk about how his wife, who is allegedly a doctor, was like, said that if your pussy is that wet, you have a number of diagnoses, differential diagnoses. And he gave a handful of them. Hold on, let me look them up.
May. It's like literally the craziest thing that's happened on the internet in a while.
He said, my doctor's wife, differential diagnosis, bacterial vaginosis, yeast infection, and trichomonas. So Ben Shapiro admitting that his wife has never been wet outside of some vaginal distress.
Honestly, are we shocked? No.
No.
Look at this man. Listen to this man. Sorry to this man. This is not a man that knows how to lay down the pipe.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. We knew that. But he didn't have to go and put himself on blast. What a fucking idiot. That's so crazy to me.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
You think he went home and he was like, himself. Hey, honey, ha-ha, the internet thinks I don't get you wet. She's probably like,
she was probably like, in my expert opinion, we don't have to get wet all the time.
I know. Ooh. Girl.
Get yourself a new man who's not Ben Shapiro.
Oh, seriously. Just you should first have and foremost. Ben Shapiro forever ago.
You know that Ben Shapiro's first cousin is Mara Wilson, aka Matilda?
What?
Yeah, and she has him blocked on everything because she hates, because obviously he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, and she's like a fucking LGBTQ queen.
Yeah.
Damn.
How horrible do you think that must be to have, like,
imagine Christmas and Thanksgiving and God, shit?
Yeah.
That sucks. That's crazy. Why is she still famous? Like, I always, you know, her Twitter is good.
Yeah. She's a writer. She writes, like, she's got a book. Yeah. And I think she'll drop in and, like, write stuff at, like, Huffington Post and, like, shit like that.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, I fuck with Matilda, so.
Yeah, because, you know, I like Danny DeVito.
Yeah. And then, like, did Danny DeVito, like, take her in for a little bit?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Mm-mm.
I thought I had read something that, but like,
they are super close, though.
Oh, okay.
Because I know her mom died when she was young, but her dad is, like, super in her life.
That's cool.
And also, I think she got really because I've been following her since, like, forever. Like, she's so her dad remarried, her stepmom is Filipina, so now she's like hella into like Filipino food and shit and like, so that's tight. It seems like she's real close with her stepmom, which is like, I mean,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Also Filipino food is fucking slaps.
I love Filipino food, but I've never had it in a restaurant and liked it. It's always been bad at a restaurant, but like, you go to like the homie's house and that shit is always so fucking good.
Yeah, there's like one by me that I like a lot, actually. And there's another one by me that I also like a lot that's owned by my friend's family.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the homie's cooking then. That one doesn't count.
Yeah, that one doesn't count. It's true.
I wanted to give a shout out.
Shout it out.
Shout out to Ferry, our homie from Amsterdam.
Damn.
Who made it rain on us for specifically to get coffee and or cocktails.
I know. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for giving us those drink options also.
I know. I will take both.
Yeah. People need out. May's going to take both his shirts.
Did you see Taylor Swift?
No. What about her?
So Trump is trying to steal the election, y'all.
Right.
So he's basically trying to shut down the United States Postal Service.
Postal Service, yeah. Which I actually wanted to read something about that.
It's like the scariest thing, the scariest, swiftest action that this man has taken so far to interfere in our election.
Right. So like most likely we're all going to be voting by mail. Like, I mean, unless you're comfortable, I guess, going to a polling place. Mm-hmm. But if you have a mail-in ballot, you shouldn't just throw it back into your, like, you know, like the post office box, because there's hella delays right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the thing, so you should contact your supervisor of elections in your local county. You could just mm-hmm. Google it mm-hmm. and see where there's an official ballot drop box. It's not usually like your local polling place, and it'll be specific drop boxes, and then those don't get handled by the USPS. They get handled by like the ballot volunteers, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So no matter what, it's going to be on time.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So I had to look this up because I wasn't sure if like mail-in voting was the same as absentee voting as far as like what you have to request or anything.
I don't think so, right?
I don't know. So I just looked up, like I went on the state's voting website, and then I saw that yes, you know, I'm registered, and yes, I'm in line to receive a ballot,
mail-in ballot.
Yeah, so it seems like we need to just make sure that we have absolutely everything in order, because they're going to do everything to try to make sure that our votes aren't counted and our voices aren't heard.
Right.
I saw him say yesterday that he suspects it could take months or years to know the results of this election.
Right.
Which is, yeah.
Ridiculous.
That's fucking crazy. So Taylor Swift, who right. is famously apolitical, really, for the most part.
I think she was, like, when she was younger, but she really started to speak up, I think.
Last
Trump.
Election? Yeah.
Yeah, she really did.
I think she had a, like, she registered people to vote at a concert of hers or something in Tennessee. Right. Is that where she from? Yeah, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Anyway, so today she said very clearly, Trump's calculated dismantling of USPS proves one thing clearly. He is well aware that we do not want him as our president. He's chosen to blatantly cheat and put millions of Americans' lives at risk in an effort to hold on to power, which is exactly right. And thank you, Taylor, for
using her platform that way.
Yeah, that's,
because she has a lot of pull with young kids who, like, probably first-time voters and everything.
For sure, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And also a lot of people in presumably the states that we need to
vote. Yeah.
To take this. So thank you, Taylor.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's fucking awesome.
Shout out to our queen, Dolly Parton, also.
Oh, yeah. Which, God, I don't know. Is there something not to like about Dolly? I guess like sometimes there was something. I don't remember now. When I did some research, I was like, Oh,
that she was kind of hesitant to call herself a feminist.
A feminist, that's right. And it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, but
there's room to grow still. Maybe she will one day.
Right.
So Dolly Parton said, "Do we think our white little asses are the only ones that matter? Black Lives Matter." And she backs Black Lives Matter.
Hell yeah.
Donates to them. She's a fucking queen.
Hell yeah. Dolly Parton. Let's put her on a coin or something.
Yeah, like celebrate her while she's here.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because she's fucking amazing. She's given back to her community in hella ways.
Yeah.
Let's go to Dollywood.
Oh, I want to go to Dollywood so fucking bad.
Me too.
And I saw also that she was funding COVID-19 research. Which, I mean, like, very quietly also. Yeah. She doesn't look for attention for the stuff that she does. Mm-mm. Yeah.
That shit's cool.
I know. Love her.
There's a lot of stuff going on with... I don't know if there's a lot of stuff actually going on with them or they just keep trying to shove down our throats, Prince Harry and Meghan.
Oh, yeah, because somebody wrote a tell-all book or something?
Yes. So they're not, like, cooperating with the book, but there's, like, stuff that's come out. And then they moved to Santa Barbara.
Oh.
But I don't really think it's that big of a deal, just that, like, they kind of keep trying to make them something. It's never going to... It's not... Fetch is never going to happen.
Also, in a pandemic, people aren't checking for them, you know?
Nobody gives a fuck about the royal family right now.
Yeah.
Except for fucking... People give a fuck that Prince Andrew's free roaming these streets.
Where is he? Like, they threw him in a dungeon, right? Like, it's never to be heard from again.
Yeah. Okay, so for all of you guys that listen to this podcast know that May and I love 90 Day Fiancé.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, so there was some drama this week off the show that happened with Paul and Kareen. So, like, obviously the show is shot months before also. Mm-hmm, so this is, like, present time. So Kareen got a protective order against Paul. And it all started unraveling, like, when she got this protective order.
Yeah.
I guess Paul is very active on Instagram and, like, constantly goes live and shit.
Yeah.
So he went live at the moment that the police was, like, coming.
No.
Yes. And he started saying this shit about Kareen. Paul called CPS on Kareen.
For what?
Like, this is before she got the protective order.
Yeah.
Because he says that he had to wear a hazmat suit to change their baby's diaper because she had left the diaper on for too long and that it was, like, dangerous and that she does dangerous things. So he called CPS. So CPS has a case open about Kareen. And Paul alleges that Kareen is cheating on him, which I feel like he always says that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Paul, also this thing about the hazmat suit is very
Paul.
Like Paul. Yeah. When he first showed up to Brazil.
Hazmat suit on deck.
Yeah. He had the hazmat suit like as soon as he touched down in Brazil. And also, if you see her on the show, she's a very doting
mother. Yeah. I mean, she does do things. I will say, like, you know, she took the baby out of the baby seat when she was in the car.
Right.
But she's from Brazil. Like, yeah.
And she's also from Tocantins, Brazil, which is like, it's like a six
hell of rural.
It's like a 6-day boat ride from like the closest big town.
Yeah, like, you know, it's so fucking rural where she's from, which is just like, I'm not trying to make an excuse for her, but she's learning, you know, like.
Yeah, for sure.
So he also alleges that she's cheating on him and that she slept with someone in their bed while the baby was in their bed. So then Karini came back and was like filed for this protective order and by the way Paul posted like her request for a protective order and everybody was like why the fuck, because she outlines all this stuff that he's been doing to her, just that he's abusive. She's like, he alleges that I slept with someone with the baby in the bed. Well, he has cameras all over our house, so if that's true, then where's the footage?
Yeah.
And she's like, he basically like imprisons me. Like, I can't leave because he's always watching me. He's always watching what I do. He's monitoring when I'm on the phone. So that's why she called the cops on him, because she said that she couldn't like call anybody. So she felt like he was like trapping her. And then Paul was trying to say like, oh, it's just the internet's out or whatever. But she got really fucking scared. So she called the cops.
That shit's scary.
If you guys have watched 90 Day Fiancé, Paul has like a sketchy history with exes. Like, there's a low-key like arsony charge, I think.
Yeah.
For like some, he tried to burn down like his ex's house. So I think this guy's like abusive.
Right. And then also you can see they don't really go into it when they're in Brazil, but when they're in Brazil, she expresses that he blows up at her. And like, you don't see it really on camera, but like, she expresses it to her mom. And then her mom also seems to understand what she's talking about, like that he has a really bad temper or something.
Yeah. Which he seems like that.
Yeah. He seems like, and he also seems to be like playing up his calmness for the camera. You know, like, I don't like that motherfucker.
I don't like him either. I don't trust him.
Yeah.
So then Yeah, so she asked for a protective order against him, and I don't know what's happening there, but I have a feeling, I mean, he might get kicked off the show. I can't imagine they're going to be, like, cool with this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I want for her to go back to Brazil where she's safe.
Me too. Why did she get involved with this guy?
Because she's...
I mean, but again, like, where she's from, like...
Yeah.
She's a six-day boat ride from the closest city, like...
Yeah, and she lives in, like, a one-room... sort of shack situation,
right,
with no electricity, with like her whole ass family.
Yeah, like any way out,
right?
Shit sucks, dude. Uh-uh.
Did you see that thing with Lakeith Stanfield earlier this week?
No.
He posted something really disturbing, like, on his Instagram.
Have you seen that movie with him and Issa?
No. I want to, though.
I want to see it too. I heard it's really good.
Yeah, especially because you don't often see just like a romance like that with people of color in a major release.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he posted something real disturbing on his Instagram. Like he poured like a bottle of vodka. I mean, he poured some vodka in some pill bottles and was kind of saying like, oh, I'm like, I don't want to be here or something. And implying that he was drinking a bottle of pills. And washing it down with vodka.
That's not funny.
It's not. It's no, not at all. And there were like three posts along those lines, and people got real worried about him. And then people were saying like, oh, who knows him? Somebody reach out to him. If anybody's friends with him, see if he's okay. And this was, I want to say like close to 11 local time. And a couple hours later, he posted like, oh, I'm sorry to alarm you guys. Everything's okay. Hmm. And then like some of his celebrity friends were like, oh, it's a false alarm. He's fine. We talked to him. He's okay. But what was that?
I don't know. And,
like, because if that was a joke, that shit's not fucking funny.
No, it's not.
And if it was a real cry for help, then like, ooh, I hope somebody's helping you. Yeah. Yeah, also take it seriously, because then if it was real and he's like, oh, no, like, I'm over it. Like, I'm fine now.
So I kind of feel about, like, Dave going to see Kanye.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's fine. Like, mm-hmm. Clearly it's not fine.
Right. So that was really weird and disturbing and, oh, yeah.
It was, speaking of Dave, did you see, remember I sent you that thing that, he let Louis C.K. open for him or close for him?
Yeah, he talking to Louis and gave Louis a platform.
And like supporting Louis.
Yeah.
Through this difficult time, apparently, for Louis. Oh, it's hard for you? Okay. I can't imagine what I would do if I saw, like, if I was somewhere and Louis C.K. stood up there to, like, make a joke. I'd be like, go jack off somewhere, you fucking pervert.
Yeah, for real.
Like, I would just be so disgusted. Like, get the fuck off this stage.
Exactly. What are you, and then do you just get up and leave? Like, what do you boo or something? Like,
I'm telling you, I would be like, go jack off somewhere, you fucking pervert. You deserve to be in jail.
Look, this is the photo that he posted, like, pouring the vodka into the pill bottle. And it says, and the caption is, I like to be by myself because I can hurt myself and no one tells me to stop or fakes like they care.
May.
Right.
Holy shit. Oh my God.
Then the next one was, reality is boring and moves too slow and no one is trustworthy. Yeah. And then bottoms up was the photo of himself allegedly drinking the whatever was in the pill bottle.
Okay, that's scary.
So scary. There was another weird thing going on. Have you been following this thing about Talib Kweli? How he's like harassing this girl online?
What?
He got kicked off Twitter permanently this week.
What?
Yeah, he got banned from Twitter. Because like some girl posted something about how people don't stand up for black women. And then someone posted something else and she responded to it like, oh, and look at all these rappers. Somebody name a rapper besides Snoop who's married to a black woman. And then someone like, you know, rattled off a list of people. And she responded to that list like, okay, but all of those people that you named are light skinned. so we need to also talk about colorism. And he took that personally, although he wasn't even named in any of it. Like, he took it personally and started attacking her, like, oh, like, you're talking shit about me or something, and then started getting all of his followers to attack her, and then they doxed her, and then people were threatening to kill her, people were threatening to rape her, and he was sending, there was like a few days in a row where he was tweeting at her like for 12 hours at a time, like nonstop.
What the hell?
And people were reporting him to Twitter, and Twitter wouldn't do anything for like 2 or 3 weeks, and finally they banned him from Twitter. Isn't that weird? And this is just like, she's like a college student. She's like a 19-year-old girl. Just like, you know, just having discussions on Twitter the way we all do about all kinds of things, like social issues. This time she was talking about colorism, and he took it to heart.
What the fuck, me? How fucking ridiculous.
Spent upwards of, I think it's 40 days stalking her online, basically. There's a Jezebel article on it. If you guys want to read it, it's really good. Shout out to Jezebel.
Yeah, shout out to Jezebel. That's fucking insane, me.
How does this grown-ass man have time to do that, first of all?
I don't know. You're disgusting. Well, because he's fucking washed up. When the fuck is the last time Talib Kweli made a fucking bop?
True. Yeah.
We don't need you anymore. Bye.
The Jezebel article is, Talib Kweli's harassment campaign shows how unprotected black women are online and off. True. And it's by Ashley Reese.
Ew. Okay. I'm sorry to this man.
True.
Disgusting.
And you know what? Like, if he took the conversation some type of way, this was his initial tweet. He's like, when she said, literally almost all of them are married to light-skinned women, but that's a conversation for another day. So he quote tweeted it and responded, nah, let's have this convo today. Are we talking all of my relationships, my children's mother as well? Or are you only talking about who you think I'm currently in a relationship with right now? I mean, is any of this really any of your business? And then he added her name is Money Maya on Twitter, which, okay, fine. If you wanted to say that, okay, right, yeah. Say your piece, and that should have been the end of it.
Yeah, what is this, like, leading a pitchfork thing?
Yeah.
That's weird.
For 40 days and 40 nights.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah, it's scary. And then people, I guess he's married to a DJ, which I did not know. And people were asking her, like, what do you think about it? Or, like, can you tell him to stop, basically?
It's like exactly what AOC said. Like, being married to someone, having daughters, that doesn't make you a decent man.
True.
Like, you may be decent to those particular women, and you could still be a misogynist piece of shit to like every other woman.
Exactly.
And just because you act decent towards your wife and daughter doesn't mean you really uphold them to the way you would maybe a son.
True.
You know, like, true. Some of those men, like, yeah, they may love their daughters, but they don't really believe in them. And like, that's a whole nother kind of fucking problem. So
Go back and listen to us talk about T.I. and the way he talks about his daughter.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so then her name is, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but DJ Eek, E-Q-U-E. Okay. And so people were asking her, like, can you do something? Or like, can you say something to him? And she tweeted, hey, he makes his own damn choices for his life.
Which is true. We don't have, fucking women don't have to fucking.
Wait. But then this is where it got disturbing to me. She said, quote, I'm sorry, but I'd rather he do it online than to me.
Oh, shit.
And she later deleted that. But don't you think that's very telling?
Yes.
Yeah. So I was like, ooh, Talib is not the man that I thought he was, honestly. Which,
no.
Like, I don't know why I expected more, because he's intelligent in his rhymes, but that doesn't mean he's a good person or anything.
No, definitely not. Man, you, it's true what they say, they either die your heroes or
true, yeah,
they
yeah
live
yeah.
long enough to become your fucking whatever, however the fuck that goes. I am a poet. I can speak words.
If we made t-shirts, everybody? That would be a great t-shirt.
Whatever I just said.
Yeah, either you live long enough to either whatever.
Whatever. Whatever that is. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You know the vibe.
It's how a democracy withers. Until it's no democracy at all. And we cannot let that happen. Do not let them take away your power. Do not let them take away your democracy. Make a plan right now for how you are going to get involved and vote. Do it as early as you can and tell your family and friends how they can vote too.
Okay, what's up, everybody? My name is Stephanie.
And my name is May, and this is The Drama Club.
This is a podcast about scandals, drama, celebrities, pop culture,
trash men,
politics,
voting, people
now
being
fiance,
people being preggaeton and secretly preggaeton.
Yeah.
Welcome.
It's my turn this week. Ooh-hoo. I'm going to do the story of Marvin Gaye. Mother.
There's too many of you. Wait, dying or crying?
Whatever the fuck you fucking say, man. Yep, dying, crying. this one's really sad. They're all sad. Most of them are sad, but okay. It's really sad when it's someone like Marvin, like who was so talented.
Yeah, yeah,
and just like. A young black man and it's just like fucked up. Anyways, okay. So Marvin was born in DC on April 2nd, 1939.
Damn.
I know. It's like another lifetime ago.
Wow.
His dad, Marvin Sr., was a church minister and his mother, Alberta, was a school teacher and domestic worker. So like she would help clean neighbors' houses and cook for other families and shit in order to help get some extra income.
She a hustler.
Yeah. Marvin Sr. barely worked, so Alberta really worked nonstop for the family to make ends meet. They had three other kids, and Marvin Sr. ended up having a fifth child with a mistress later on in his life.
Damn, not only do you not have a job, but you out here, your job is fucking other hoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Marvin Sr. is all around trash. Like,
okay.
It pains me to call that man Marvin because it's Marvin Jr.'s name. Mm-hmm. So. Anyways.
Also, Marvin the Martian. Don't sell me the name of Marvin the Martian.
Marvin the Martian is a throwback. And in Clueless, remember she draws Marvin the Martian?
Yeah.
Such a nerdy thing.
And he wants to put it on the bottom of his skateboard.
Yeah. I just saw this lady in Santa Ana right now wearing a mask with Betty Boop all over it. And I was like, oh, damn, that's tight. She was an older Mexican lady, too.
That's tight. I saw someone had a mask of the mask of Jim Carrey.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so they lived in a crowded project and all attended church with their dad. Marvin started singing in the church choir when he was four. The family was part of a Pentecostal church called the House of Cod, which was strict as fuck.
Cod?
God. Okay. That's my seafood restaurant that I run on the weekends, House of Cod. Amen. Marvin Sr. would hit his kids for any number of reasons and frankly things that didn't seem to be reason at all.
Sure.
Marvin Jr. described his dad as, quote, living with a king, a peculiar, cruel, all-powerful king.
No.
Alberta would console Marvin nonstop and always encouraged his singing because he was so good at it and he seemed to love it, which ended up becoming his passion and clearly he was gifted in really early on. Marvin Jr. was beaten from age 7 well into his teenage years by his father for any number of things, like if he left his comb like in the wrong place, or if he came home from the school bus like a few minutes too late, his dad would beat the shit out of him.
So he was looking for an excuse to beat up on him.
Oh yeah, for sure. Marvin,
what a man.
Yeah. Marvin then rebelled. In his later years, he'd start skipping church. He'd start talking back and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Alberta said that she always felt like she was caught in the middle of the disciplines of her kids and her husband. And she often felt like Marvin Sr. hated Marvin Jr. because he seemed to get it the most.
Okay.
Marvin Sr. used to say to Alberta that he didn't want Marvin Jr. and that he didn't think that he was really his son. And then he would also resent Alberta for showing Marvin Jr. a lot of love and attention.
Mm.
Alberta said Marvin Jr. understood that dynamic pretty early on, and so he obviously clung to his mother because that's mm-hmm. where he found solace and love. Mm-hmm. Marvin's sister said that it wasn't just beatings that Marvin Jr. received. Like, it wasn't like he would get spanked or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. she said literally, like, there wasn't an inch of his body that hadn't been bruised by his fucking dad.
Wow.
And ugh. All five children had problems wetting the bed, and uh-huh. this led to all of them getting more beatings by their dad.
Oh, God.
Just probably, like, just a vicious cycle. Like, they're probably wetting the bed because...
For sure.
They're getting the beatings, and then mm-hmm. they're getting more beatings because they're wetting the bed.
And they don't feel safe, not even at night. And it's, yeah, this is really shitty. And Junior is the oldest?
I don't know.
Okay.
So Marvin Sr., like I said, he wasn't working very much. And then towards the end of his ministerial career, he became an alcoholic. Alberta also said that he enjoyed cross-dressing.
Yeah.
And he would wear her panties and her nylons and stuff, like, mm-hmm. around the house all the time.
That's hot.
And Marvin Jr. would see his dad on occasion, like, in like, when he was cross-dressing. And slowly their whole neighborhood became aware that their dad
Damn.
Was doing
what?
This.
Why? Why is it leaking,
you know,
out like that?
They're living in a project. Like, I bet it takes one person to fucking see him, and then that shit spreads like wildfire.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is like the 50s.
People are with the fucking cheesemate, especially, yeah, like, it's the 50s. So it's like, yeah. What else you got going on? You're going to talk about what you saw on I Love Lucy last week, or you going to talk about Marvin Wendell's panties?
Yeah, definitely the panties. And then so that led to a lot of bullying and unwanted attention for the kids. Because this was, you know, like I said, the 50s.
Yeah.
Alberta often thought about leaving.
Also, he's the minister on top of everything.
He's alcoholic. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Alberta often thought about leaving Marvin Sr., but she said she felt sorry for him because of his own really terrible abusive upbringing. Mm-hmm. She also cited that she had a lack of courage to leave him, both because of her religious beliefs and just she was scared.
And you got all these kids. You're going to do that by yourself, you know?
Exactly. Like, finances.
Yeah.
So Marvin started taking singing more seriously when he was in high school while the family moved around to other projects around D.C. He joined some doo-wop groups while in high school. Mm-hmm. And at this time, his relationship with his dad got even worse. His dad started kicking him out of the house from time to time for, again, other reasons that don't make any fucking sense. And then in 1956, 17-year-old Marvin dropped out of school and enlisted in the Air Force kind of as a way to get away from his family. However, he was immediately disappointed and started rebelling against all the orders. And then he faked a mental illness in order to be honorably discharged.
Okay, we love a scammer.
Marvin said that he lost his virginity to a prostitute while in the Air Force and that this sparked an obsession with sex workers for him.
Okay.
And he said he found the entire thing like an exchange of power very exciting.
I bet.
Yeah. After being discharged from the Air Force, Marvin started a quartet group called the Marquees. And they performed around D.C., later got signed to OK Records.
Okay.
They dropped one single called Wyatt Earp that failed and got them dropped from the label. And then he started writing his own songs and stuff.
All right.
So they ended up getting hired by another soul group, the Moonglows, as employees, like backup singers.
Mm-hmm.
And they started getting work as session singers. So like they would record, like he recorded a song with Chuck Berry in the back as the background singer and shit. And he was getting paid for music, which is great.
Yeah.
The crew broke up in 1960 and Marvin relocated to Detroit and signed to Tri-Fi Records as a session musician.
Mm-hmm.
He landed a gig performing at Motown president Berry Gordy's house for a party, and Berry was hella impressed by Marvin's presence and his voice.
Can you imagine getting that call like, oh, you got to go perform at Berry Gordy's house?
No, you've seen your fucking ass off.
Yes.
Marvin then signed with Motown subsidiary Tamla, which was also owned by Berry Gordy. At first, he was trying to become a jazz musician and hadn't really even considered R&B. Which is fucking crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. Like, how could this the voice
R&B
of R&B?
Singer, yeah.
Yeah.
Marvin changed his last name a bit because he was born Marvin Gay, G-A-Y, but he ended up adding an E at the end, a la Sam Cooke, in order to both distance himself from his father. And he had kind of a sensitive spot to jokes about his sexuality because of all the bullying he had suffered as a kid due to his dad's cross-dressing.
Sure.
So he didn't want his last name to be a target for that, which at this time was still really, really controversial.
Yeah.
His first single dropped in 1961 called Let Your Conscience Be Your Guide.
Okay.
It was a failure. But he was still working as a session singer, so he was still making a living off this shit.
Okay.
So Marvin had been a weed smoker during his early musician years, and he pretty much remained one throughout the rest of his life. But around this time, he was introduced to a little something called cocaine. And now this addiction would follow him pretty much the rest of his life.
Oh, no.
Leading to him eventually freebasing the drug and just becoming completely dependent.
Oh, why do singers do these kind of drugs that fuck with your vocal cords, too?
I don't know, May. I don't know. I just think being a musician is conducive of living this really reckless lifestyle because...
Yeah.
Really little is actually needed of you. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, like, you have to get it together for 3 minutes to record this song.
Yeah.
You know, true. Like, and so, fuck.
Right.
And then you got to get it together for this 1 hour performance.
Yeah.
It's not like movies where it's like, this is fucking months and you're going to fucking ruin a lot of people's lives if you...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, when you're on a tour or something, then it's like, okay, well... Is this a party? Like, you know, like we're going from town to town, going from sex worker to sex worker, probably.
At this time, he also met Anna Gordy, who was 17 years older than him. And yes, she's Motown founder Berry Gordy's sister. Mm-hmm. They began dating and after 3 years got married in Chicago. Marvin was hell inspired by this relationship and love and dedicated a lot of his early songs to Anna. In 1962, he dropped his first solo hit, Stubborn Kinda Fellow, and it reached number 8 on the R&B chart. He then dropped Hitchhike, which got up to number 30 on the Hot 100.
Wow.
They were both put on his second album, That Stubborn Kinda Fellow, and he performed at the Apollo Theater in 1963, which was recorded for a live album, which then included one of his first international hits called Can I Get a Witness?
Woo!
In 1964, he recorded an album of duets with Mary Wells.
Duets.
Duets, sorry. I was going to text you guys the other day. Do you say data or do you say data?
I say data, but either or is acceptable.
Acceptable? Yeah.
Yeah.
I also say data, and I was listening to a podcast, and she said data, and I was like, bitch. Not like I
data
have any
sound
right.
wrong.
That sound wrong. Not like I have any right to say anybody knows how to fucking pronounce everything wrong. Anyway, so they recorded this album of duets together. And the single Once Upon a Time and What's the Matter with You Baby both reached the top 20 pop singles chart.
Damn. Okay. So the pop charts now.
Yeah. So we're crossing over now.
That's what's
Plus, up. Mary Wells is like a big ass deal.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
So just linking up with her is good.
Right.
His next solo song was How Sweet It Is to be loved by you. And that broke the top 50 and reached number 6 in the U.S. He then started getting more TV exposure and performed on American Bandstand, which was a fucking giant show at the time.
Yeah.
He then started working with Tammy Terrell and they started recording more duets together, including the massive hit Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Ain't no mountain high enough.
Your Precious Love, which I had almost forgotten about that one, and I listened to it this week, and I was like,
I thought
like,
that was Diana Ross. Or maybe they end up singing it, like, live together or something.
I think they do, actually. You're All I Need to Get By, which, come on. Mm-hmm. That, and then the fucking Method Man and Mary J. Blige version is just, like, amazing.
Yeah.
And Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, Baby. How are you not just happy listening to this shit?
Yeah, for real. Damn, Tammy and Marvin had like hella bops together.
It's like a very, very great partnership.
Yeah.
By now, he's pretty much become the breadwinner for his entire family. Mm-hmm. And his dad resented that and disapproved of his career in music. Because, you know, because Marvin's talking about love. And
Yeah. This is the devil's shit.
Right. This is the devil's shit.
Yeah.
So Marvin continued to remain close mostly to his mother.
And his marriage to Anna had become increasingly turbulent because of, you know, he's working a lot and he's going on tour and stuff.
Yeah.
And also, Marvin doesn't really know how to express himself when he wants attention. And he kind of falls into, like, antagonizing tactics, like when he was young and he would just, like, skip church and, you know, do shit like that. Because he's like, well, I'm going to get in trouble anyway, so.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1966, Anna's younger sister had a baby boy after she became pregnant at 16 years old. And this was super scandalous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So Marvin and Anna decided to adopt the boy and they named him Marvin Gaye III.
Okay.
Remember that Anna's 17 years older than Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
So they hadn't been able to naturally conceive a child. Marvin and Anna never told their son of his actual birth mother.
Mm.
So Marvin the third didn't find out the truth until after his father's death.
Ooh.
And Anna's sister Denise admitted it publicly in 1998.
Oh.
That's crazy, right?
That is fucked up. Who are you protecting, though? Like, what?
It's just a different time.
Yeah.
People thought those things were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Tammy Terrell collapsed in Marvin's arms in October 1967 during a performance in Virginia. She was rushed to the hospital where they discovered a tumor in her brain. And the tumor was malignant, but ended her career as a live performer. She continued to try and record with Marvin, but she ended up needing multiple surgeries and really couldn't continue working.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin was super devastated by Tammy's sickness and became super depressed. Then in 1968, he recorded I Heard It Through the Grapevine, which became his first number one that had reached the charts internationally, selling over 4 million copies.
I mean, one of the greatest songs ever of all time.
Yeah. Gaye was disillusioned with the music industry after everything that had happened with Tammy. And unfortunately, he didn't enjoy the milestone as much as he should have. Because he had been working for this, but it's fucked up. Like, his best friend, like his partner, you know, his work partner is going through like something awful. So he felt like he really didn't deserve the success. And he said that he felt like he was just a Motown puppet.
A lot of people felt that way on Motown.
Motown is on our fucking list.
Yeah.
His album MPG hit number one. And he also wrote two hits for the group The Originals that year called Baby I'm For Real and The Bells. Marvin was not well following Tammy's collapse. Like I said, he was deeply depressed. And at this point, he was deep into his cocaine addiction. Also, his marriage wasn't doing so well, so it was just all around a bad time.
So then, like, if your personal life has gone to shit and you're not enjoying your work, then what's it for, you know?
Exactly. In 1969, Marvin attempted suicide while alone in Detroit with a handgun.
What?
His friend found him and stopped the attempt.
Wow.
Tammy Terrell died from brain cancer on March 16th, 1970. And Marvin entered a deep depression and briefly attempted to leave music behind. And he even tried to, like, play professional football. Like, you know,
What?
I know. It just doesn't make sense. But this is like, that's grief, dude. Like,
yeah, you do crazy shit.
You do fucking anything. Mm. He blamed himself and he blamed their overworked schedule for her illness, which obviously that's not accurate. But
right.
Her death also fueled, like I said, his cocaine addiction. And at this time, a lot of people were speculating that Marvin and Tammy maybe were romantically involved, which they kind of always did speculate that, but they had both always denied it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after she passed and everybody could see how devastated Marvin was, it kind of just heightened all the rumors.
Oh. So do we know? Was it true?
No, they both denied. He said no and she said no. Like, they never... You know,
okay, yeah.
I don't think so. And even like his wife has never said or his ex-wife had never said that. Oh, spoiler alert. They don't make it. I mean, come on. Marvin met with his friend Obie Benson of the Four Tops and they talked about police brutality one night.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, Obie had just witnessed police brutality at an anti-war protest in Berkeley. Inspired by their conversation, Marvin wrote and recorded the song, What's Going On? At first, Berry Gordy had refused to release it, citing that it was way too political. Marvin then went on strike from all further recording for the label until they promised to drop the song.
Good for him.
Yeah. So in 1971, they did just that, and the song reached number one and stayed there for 5 weeks.
Damn. Do you remember when we were kids and all the celebrities made a remake of that shit?
May. I, how could I forget? That shit was iconic. That was like peak MTV TRL era.
Yeah. It was like Bono, Jennifer Gwen Lopez, Stefani, Gwen Stefani. At her
peak coolness.
Yeah. Yeah.
J-Lo.
NSYNC, I think.
Fuck yeah. NSYNC was in that shit. Jessica Simpson and her 98 degrees ass husband. Hell yeah. So now Marvin wants out of his fucking deal with Motown. Specifically, he wanted creative control. So he gave them an ultimatum and spent 10 days recording his next album, What's Going On. Mm-hmm. And in return, he'd get creative control back after this last album.
Sick.
This became his first million number selling album, with two more top 10 singles, including Mercy, Mercy Me. Wow. And Inner City Blues. I know that song's so good.
Oh, God. People don't talk about, like, that shift in his sound enough, I think.
No, and it's so great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. He was nominated for 2 Grammys and NAACP Awards, too. And it became Rolling Stone's Album of the Year, which was a big deal back then. Mm-hmm. I just saw everybody on Twitter, like, saying, like, what was your Rolling Stone album the year you were born? And
yeah.
Or the month you were born and the Vanity Fair.
Did you do yours?
My Vanity Fair one was Eddie Murphy. Mm-hmm. And my Rolling Stone one was fucking 1988 Van Halen, baby.
That's tight.
America. Marvin signed a new deal with Motown for $1 million in 1971, making it the most lucrative deal by a black recording artist at the time.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, good for him, but I don't understand this move, because clearly he's clashing with Gordy over politics and creative control. But then he's married to Anna also, so I think that creates problems for him.
Yeah, that shit is messy.
His next song, Trouble Man, was released, but they were fighting, of course. Mm-hmm. So Gordy didn't want to promote it, and then the album that was to follow just got shelved.
Oh, okay.
At this time, Marvin and Anna finally legally separated, and Marvin moved to L.A. full-time. In August 1973, Let's Get It On was released and became his second number one single. The album stayed on the charts for 2 years and sold over 4 million copies. His final duet project was with none other than Diana Ross.
Like yes.
And it was like fucking huge. Like, it was a gigantic success. He went on his first tour in a long ass time in 1974 to critical appraise, to public appraise. It was just like fucking amazing. The live album that followed was like fucking top of the charts.
But he's still this whole time struggling with drugs?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
While working on this album, Marvin started up a relationship with 17-year-old Janice Hunter.
Oh no.
They moved in together and they had a daughter named Nona in 1974 and a son the following year.
That's a cute name, Nona.
Yeah. At this time, he was earning $100,000 a night for his performances.
Jesus Christ.
Could you imagine?
Oh, my God.
Which is, I looked it up, it's $520,000 a night in today's dollars.
Oh, my God.
He was a really highly regarded live performer, which if you go on YouTube, it is pretty it's enticing, like watching him perform.
Yeah, live. I bet.
Which, by the way, I fell into another Star Spangled Banner hole. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Marvin do the Star Spangled Banner at the NBA All-Stars game?
Yeah. Him, it's like one of the most iconic. It's
fucking amazing. Yeah, yeah. How do you make that a bop?
Right, right.
And then it's like, I think that's what Fergie was trying
to do. That's what I was going to say, because I don't know if that was the first time I heard it, but she did cite it. Or something like that. Like, she wanted to do something, like, allude to that. So I was like, what? So I looked it up.
But you're not that.
I was like, yeah, exactly.
Only Marvin could do that.
Like, yeah.
It's not even real. Like, you just watch it and you're just like, it's not even fair that somebody is this fucking talented. Like, that's insane. He then renewed his contract with Motown again in 1975, went on a European tour, and dropped the number one hit, Got to Give It Up.
Got to give it up.
As okay, so then after 2 years of separation, Anna finally filed for divorce, and they were in court for over a year and a half before it was finally finalized in 1977. As part of his decree, Marvin gave a portion of the royalties from his next album to Anna. After his divorce was finalized, he married Janice Hunter in 1977.
Oh, but they had been together for a minute at that point. Yeah.
There were rumors that he married her partially for tax reasons, but Janice said that they had actually survived a car accident together, and this mm-hmm. made them want to cement their relationship.
Okay.
They had an open marriage that was riddled with drug abuse and domestic abuse. Oh. And in 1979, she filed for legal separation. She said that she was never comfortable with the idea of an open marriage, and she felt like Marvin pressured her to have relationships with other men.
Oh.
They ended up staying in touch throughout the rest of his life, and I guess they were close, which they had kids, so I mean they had to. Marvin's last recordings include the album Here My Dear, composed of songs about his failed marriage. It did super poorly on the charts, which was unfortunate because part of the royalties were set up as Anna's alimony.
Oh, yeah. Oh no.
His cocaine addiction then intensified as he fell into a ton of financial issues with the IRS. He fled to Maui, where he struggled to try and record a disco album.
That's not the move.
Mm-mm-mm. In 1979, while in Maui, Marvin...
Also, it's 1979. You know, yeah. People aren't, like, banging for disco in 79 the way they were even, like, just 2 years before.
Fuck no. While living in Maui, Marvin ingested a full ounce of cocaine in a second suicide attempt. He said after he was, like, released and everything, I'd given up. The problems were way too big for me. I just wanted to be left alone and blow my brains on high octane toot. It would be a slow but relatively pleasant death. Certainly less messy than a gun. In 1980, Motown convinced him to go on a European tour in order to make some money and try to, you know, clear up all his IRS shit. At the end of the tour, Marvin stayed in London because, like I said, he was still scared. He was still trying to, like, flee the IRS shit.
Yeah.
He owed, I guess, $4.5 million in back taxes.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean.
Damn, how many nights a week he got to work for that?
Imagine. While in London, he tried to work on a new album called Love Man, which was originally set out to be a disco album, like I said. Mm-hmm. He ended up trying to rework it into a soul album after, you know, like realizing it wasn't really working out in disco.
Yeah.
Motown got a stolen copy of the album from one of his traveling musicians. They remixed it and dropped it in the States without Marvin's cassette.
Oh, no. Why would they do that? Motown is shady, man.
They're so fucking shady, man. He said their rush release is like selling an unfinished Picasso, and then he vowed to never work with Motown again. Come on, bro. We've been telling you that.
Also, this is sort of like the tail end of Motown's relevancy. So this is probably like
their last attempt.
Yeah. Although I think Boyz II Men were on Motown, but that's like their resurgence.
That's crazy. In 1981, Marvin moved to Belgium and tried to get clean and began exercising.
Hey.
And after a few months, he sought a comeback tour in England. His personal attorney said that this period in Belgium was the best thing that ever happened to him. And honestly, I think this sounds like the best period of his life. This is like the longest period of sobriety that Marvin has since becoming a musician. CBS started chasing him around after learning that he was trying to leave Motown, and then they negotiated his release from Motown and signed him in 1982.
Wow. So didn't they also do that to Michael Jackson, right?
I'm sure they did, yeah.
So it's like CBS has now poached Marvin Gaye and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, they know what the fuck they're doing over there.
Yeah.
His next album dropped on CBS called Midnight Love, and the first single was Sexual Healing.
Sexual
Healing, baby. It was the biggest hit of his career. It spent 10 weeks at number one. Imagine how fucking pissed Motown must have been at that shit.
Imagine how fucking pissed Anna was at that shit.
If this was basically the biggest R&B song of the entire 1980s,
yeah,
reaching international success, winning him his first two Grammys, it was like fucking groundbreaking. I saw people talking about it on, I was watching like these VH1 things, and they were talking about how like back then, like there had never really been like a song that was that sexual, that like sounded right. like sex, and like he was like performing it like it was like turning people on, and they were like, what the fuck, how could this be happening? Like, it was like amazing, you know.
There's something warm in my panties.
And a lot of people were talking about how like this then became kind of like its own subsection of R&B, like this hypersexual R&B.
It's true.
But nobody had done that shit before Marvin. But Marvin went up there. Marvin ain't no Ben Shapiro, let me tell you. Marvin knows Marvin all got, about that WAP.
Marvin got all the bitches' panties wet.
Could you imagine?
All
of
them. All you grandmas, all you moms, all of them were wet.
He completed his final tour on August 14th, 1983 in Costa Mesa, California. It was successful overall, but Marvin had fallen back into heavy cocaine use while on tour. He never really liked touring, and he felt a lot of pressure while on the road, and that all kind of pushed him back into the drug use.
Move back to Belgium. They got fries. They got waffles.
He's
got to
make money, though. That's a thing. See, it's like so fucked up.
Yeah.
So he was having a lot of cocaine-triggered paranoia, and by the end of the tour, he was wearing a bulletproof vest because he thought that there were people trying to kill him, like coming out for him.
Wow.
And this was all unfounded. But then one of his roadies ended up committing suicide while they were in New Jersey, and that like sparked this like crazy round of paranoia in Marvin.
Oh no.
To try and get better, after the tour, he moved into his parents' house in LA. He also moved in because his mom had recently had kidney surgery, and so she needed a lot of help. And he had bought this house for his parents back in 1973. So, you know, he moved in.
It makes sense. I mean, it would make sense if you had like a good relation, like if your dad wasn't this abusive monster.
So Marvin, like we know, like Mae just said, had a really tough childhood with his dad that led to a bitter relationship in his adulthood. At first, his dad wasn't there when Marvin came to stay, but then he returned. And at first it was Marvin and both of his sisters living with his mom. But then after their dad showed up, the sisters ended up leaving because there was way too much conflict between Marvin Jr. and Marvin Sr. They said they couldn't handle it. During the following 6 months, both struggled to keep their distance from one another. And Marvin Sr. even called the cops on Marvin Jr. at one point to try to get him to leave. Allegedly, Marvin Jr. said he wanted to try to make peace with his dad because he's like, it's the only dad I have, you know?
Yeah.
For Christmas in 1983... Marvin Jr. gave his dad a pistol to protect himself from intruders. And remember that Marvin Jr. has like this paranoia that's brought on by his cocaine use. So I think that has something to do with it. His close friends and family say that he was like straight up super paranoid at this time. And he was super scared of intruders and that he really wasn't talking about much other than suicide or death. People said sometimes they would come over and he would have his shoes on the wrong feet. He would be wearing like three coats in the middle of summer. Like,
what? So he was just not
well.
Yeah. And now I'm wondering if like he quote unquote faked mental illness to get out of the military was like.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I think a lot of his problems stem from his drug use.
Yeah, that's true.
On one occasion, Martin jumped out of his car. And people cite this as his third attempt to commit suicide. He only suffered minor bruises. And Marvin's sisters say that there was no doubt in their mind that Marvin Jr. at this time wanted to die. So Marvin's dad had obtained an insurance policy on the family's former house. Marvin Sr. and Alberta started arguing over the policy letter because I guess it had become misplaced somewhere in their house. These arguments grew and grew and ended up spilling all over the house, like different rooms and shit, even at one point like inside Marvin Jr.'s room. Marvin became upset with the way that his dad was confronting his mom, so he stood up for her. He wanted his dad to leave her alone, and so like that night Marvin was like, fine, whatever. Like, he went to like another part of the house, and Marvin Alberta says that he kept yelling, but he was like in a completely separate part of the house. On April 1st, 1984, at 12:30 in the afternoon, Marvin Sr. again, so this is the next day now, again started shouting at Alberta, about the fucking insurance policy that they couldn't find. Marvin Jr. from upstairs in his robe shouted back at his dad and told him basically like, shut the fuck up. Like, you know, like stop berating mom over that shit. Alberta said that Marvin Sr. told him, like, if you have something to say, say it in person, say it to my face, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin, like, shouted at him, like, don't come into my room. Like, fuck you. Like, leave me alone. Marvin Sr. then charged upstairs to verbally attack Alberta over the document again, causing Marvin Jr. to jump out of his bed and again tell his dad just like, get the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Jr. became enraged because his dad wouldn't listen and reportedly shoved his dad into the hallway and began to kick and punch his dad. Alberta said that she told Marvin to stop, Marvin Jr., but that he wouldn't listen. Marvin Jr. then followed his dad into the bedroom and continued to just kick the shit out of him.
What?
Alberta stepped in and separated them and led Marvin Jr. back into his own room. Minutes later, Marvin Sr. walked into Marvin Jr.'s room, pointed a pistol at him, and shot him directly in the heart. Alberta said that she was standing 8 feet away from Marvin Jr. She said that Marvin Sr. walked in, he didn't say anything, pointed the gun, and shot. She said she fucking screamed, but that it was all over in, like, an instant.
What?
Marvin Jr. slid down to the floor after being shot.
Just one time?
So the shot entered the right side of Marvin's chest, perforated his right lung, heart, diaphragm, liver, stomach, and left kidney before finally stopping.
Jesus.
After the first shot, his dad, like, and Marvin fell to the ground, his dad stepped closer and shot him a second time at point blank range.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. So it's not even like,
it's like an execution.
Yeah, it's not like a moment of passion of like, I lost control. It's like, I want him dead.
Alberta then screamed and ran out of the bedroom, pleading for her husband not to shoot her.
Yeah, of course.
Marvin Sr. then went and hid the gun underneath a pillow. And Marvin's brother, Frankie, and sister-in-law, who lived on a guest house on the property, heard the first shot and the screams. So they rushed out and they ran into Alberta outside, who ran into them screaming, he shot Marvin. He's killed my boy. Frankie ran into the house, quietly walking through his brother to his brother's room. He said he was really scared because he didn't know where his dad was and if his dad still had the gun and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't know what had happened to Marvin. He walked into Marvin's room and held Marvin as he bled out. According to Frankie, Marvin whispered, I got what I wanted. I couldn't do it myself. It's okay. There's no more left in me.
Oh my God.
Police arrived 20 minutes after the shooting and Alberta went to Marvin Sr.'s room to ask where the gun was. He never responded, but she found it underneath the pillow. Marvin Sr. walked outside and sat on the front porch as Alberta came out with the gun and dropped it on the lawn, and Marvin Sr. was then arrested. Marvin Jr. was taken to the hospital and pronounced dead on arrival. He died one day before his 45th birthday.
Crazy young. Oh my God.
And the career he's had, right?
Yeah.
After his death was announced, crowds formed around the house in shock and horror, placing memorabilia and other items across the lawn, and they all held vigils throughout the next day, his birthday. News stations began reporting the death immediately, and eulogies were being delivered internationally. The story was front page news everywhere. Like, it was fucking insane.
Because it's a tremendous tragedy. Like, any death obviously is a tragedy, but like,
Your dad,
like this, it's like Shakespearean, and ugh, it's ugly.
After like one of the biggest albums,
yeah,
you know, in the world, like you don't expect that.
Oh,
everyone collectively felt shock, especially from his peers. It was also like a really dark day for music, and it's constantly listed as one of the most shocking moments in pop culture and music history. During his initial interviews with police, Marvin Sr. said that he was scared and only meant to shoot in self-defense, claiming also that he didn't know that the gun had any bullets in it.
Mm-hmm.
The police asked if he loved his son, to which he responded, let's say I didn't dislike him. Allegedly, he sobbed after being told that his son died, realizing that he had in fact killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Jr.'s siblings said that they believed that this was Marvin's suicide, like Marvin's premeditated suicide, mm-hmm. and that he provoked his dad to kill him by gifting him the gun and by fighting with him and shit. They thought that Marvin had done this to get out of his own misery and also to help his mom get away from their dad. Also, he would seemingly finally get revenge on his dad, who would then likely go to jail.
This is all very like this tangled web of, I don't know that, especially given Marvin's mental state at that time, he was
savvy
thinking,
enough.
Yeah, even, no way.
Yeah, I can't personally wrap my head around that sort of explanation of what went down, but I could see why a sibling in this situation would try to come up with some sort of fucking...
To make it make sense. To make it not be in vain, quote unquote. Right. Or, you know.
Like, I get that, but I don't... Personally, I don't believe this.
Yeah.
On April 5th, 1984, Marvin Gaye's funeral was held at Forest Lawn in Glendale. Over 10,000 people attended, including his two ex-wives, his siblings, his mother, his three children. Smokey Robinson gave the eulogy while Stevie Wonder performed. He had an open casket and it was buried in his last costume from his last tour, which was a gold and white military uniform.
He dressed so sick, man. He had like
everything.
One of the all-time great styles, I think.
Yeah. His body was later cremated and his kids spread his ashes near the Pacific Ocean. He had no will at the time of his death. His oldest son, Marvin III, became co-administrator of his estate. But remember that Marvin owed a ton of back taxes?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. There's probably nothing left.
He was about $1.9 million in debt at the time of his death. But you know how after people die, they make a ton of money?
That's true.
The royalties from his work ended up paying everything off and then some.
And he wrote music, so his publishing also. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Marvin Sr. was held at L.A. County Jail on $100,000 bail for first-degree murder. He maintained that he did not actually mean to shoot and kill his son. During a routine checkup, a tumor was found in his brain. He was then evaluated by two psychiatrists and ruled competent to stand trial. He appeared in court on July 13th. His wife, Alberta, filed for divorce 2 days later. Marvin Sr. was granted a plea bargain due to traces of cocaine found in Junior's blood and the pictures of Marvin Sr. indicating that there had indeed been an altercation because they took pictures of Marvin Sr. and he had been fucked up by Marvin Jr. So he ended up getting this deal. He pled no contest to voluntary manslaughter and was sentenced to a 6-year suspended sentence and
so
5
nothing.
Years probation. Nothing, man.
Ugh. And you know, okay, if he, let's say, you know, he's got the gun in his pocket, he's being attacked and he shoots him. That's one thing.
Right. But he went and got the gun.
Yeah.
Went to his room, shot him in the heart and then shot him again. Point blank.
Yeah. And he gets nothing.
Several of Marvin's colleagues released tributes to his memory, including Diana Ross, who released the song Missing You. Mm-hmm. Tina Marie released the song My Dear Mr. Gay. Mm-hmm. And the Commodores released the song called Night Shift, which is really great, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, D.C. holds annual Marvin Gaye Day celebrations. And his mother founded the Marvin Gaye Jr. Memorial Foundation, which is dedicated to helping young and, well, anybody struggling with alcohol and drug abuse. Alberta died in May 1987 from bone cancer. And in 1996, Marvin Gaye posthumously received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. More recently, on March 11, 2015, Marvin's family was awarded $7.4 million in damages following the lawsuit for borderline. I'm not going to get into that because...
That's its own thing.
That's its own thing, but fucking wild. There's been several attempts at a biopic of Marvin's life.
Mm-hmm.
In 2006, Jesse Martin was going to star in a movie called Sexual Healing about his life. Later,
why would you call it sexual healing?
Because they got to, man. Also, it's 2006. So
yeah, I mean, but okay, what's going on would be better. Sexual healing.
Then later, Lenny Kravitz was being asked to play him. Focus Features at one point bought some script that they said was a biopic. And then at one point, Cameron Crowe was working on a biopic with Will Smith and Terrence Howard as contenders for the main role. But he also later abandoned the project. At one point, even Dr. Dre was in talks to produce a Marvin biopic. So who knows?
Yeah.
But his legacy definitely lives on. And that's the story of Marvin Gaye.
Wait, what happened to his dad, though?
Oh, nothing. He's dead. He didn't serve any time, eh?
Yeah, but then what happened? He
died. I don't know. I didn't go into it. I didn't think about it much more. He died in 1998.
Damn. Alberta.
Let's see. Yeah, they fought. Alberta filed for divorce. He briefly returned to the same house they were at, but he ended up having to move to a nursing home. Because remember, they had found that tumor in him?
That's right.
Yeah, and so he was in a nursing home for the rest of his life after that, and he died of pneumonia at 84 years old in 1998.
Good riddance.
Yeah, seriously. Fucking monster.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, that was fucked up, Steph.
I know.
You warned us.
I told you guys. It's so fucked up. Marvin is somebody like, we don't deserve a talent like that. I feel like,
it's,
you know,
it's like a once in a generation
talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's really crazy. Like, just watch, like, literally just go on YouTube and watch a few videos of him. It's like,
right.
This is insane. This is literally somebody born to do this.
Yeah. And just the influence on, like, literally everybody that came after.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's so insane.
And what more? He had just had, like, the biggest hit of his career. Where could he have taken that? You know?
What did we miss out on by losing him?
At 40, what? 3? 44?
Yeah. The world lost a fucking gem that
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Whew. Well, that was this week's Drama Club.
Thanks for listening. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Drama Club Pod and on the website dramaclubpod.com.
On the hotline, 505-539-0556. At our P.O. Box, P.O. Box number 27433, LACA 90027. Leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Send us a tip, just like Fairy in Amsterdam. And we'll talk to you on Thursday with a brand new Afternoon Delight episode.
Bye.
Bye.
However, whatever with your helmet.